Financial technology, or fintech, is one of the fastest growing industries in the world today, with New York, London, Tel Aviv, Edinburgh, Singapore, Moscow, and other major cities all vying for a piece of the action. Welcome to Breaking Banks, the first dedicated radio show that focuses on how this new boom is changing everything, from the way we bank to the very concept of money itself. Now, here's your host, Brett King.
Hey guys, so about this time of year, we always like to do our futurist thing, get our tech on, and I thought it'd be great to bring back a couple of fairly regular guests on the show, but we've never had them on the show together, and they come at this problem from two different angles. But I'm talking, of course, of Mr. Voice First, Brian Rumley.
Brian? Thank you, Brett. Honored to be here today, and two of my biggest heroes in tech, so this is wonderful.
And the second invitee is, again, a guy who's been on the show numerous times, Robert Scoble, also known as the Scobalizer.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's so awesome. Brian and I love talking to each other. We could talk for hours. Yeah. So this will be a fun one.
Yeah, the reason I got started or got this idea was I've been watching you guys on Twitter and your Twitter exchange, and that sort of gave me a thought about, I could see you guys interacting in the social media domain. I'm like, this would be excellent to get these two guys together. So
I assume you weren't excited by our history tweets that we go back and forth.
I like those. I like those. You guys know I have a lot of historical stuff that I put in my writing, so I love that stuff.
We have a lot of history.
Yeah, a lot of history and a lot of new things are just popping up just before the holidays. This Qualcomm Snapdragon release.
Yeah, the chip-based NLP stuff, right?
Yeah, well, not only that, I mean, Robert can probably jump in on some of the statistics on this, but we're talking about really a magnitude leap ahead from what I think anybody was expecting from Qualcomm.
Yeah. Seven cameras is the key because it's the same number of cameras that a Tesla has on it.
Right.
Facing outward, which does the autonomous driving, right, among other things. And it really is showing a new age is arriving. You know, I just was talking to Sebastian Thrun, which he ran the autonomous car team at Google in the early days. And
he's Brad Templeton.
Right? He told me, Brad worked for him. And he told me that he switched his belief about this argument between LIDARs and cameras because he's working on AI at Stanford with a bunch of kids who are going to Stanford. And he says the stuff that you're seeing in universities with computational photography is just stunning. And he thinks that cameras are the way to go. And it's funny, I was just talking with the CTO of Ford after they released their new Mustang, their new electronic Mustang. And they made the same bet. They said, you cannot bet against the R&D dollars that are being spent in cameras because of the cell phone industry. And they're seeing the same thing, that the hires that they're making in AI out of universities right now are all about this computer vision field. And it's real exciting to have seven cameras on your face. It's really scary too. There's a lot of privacy implications here, but there's seven cameras, two of which are black and white for room tracking, two of which are color so that it can see the room and record it. There's a camera for your eyes to study your eye movement and focus, and a camera on your mouth. And I think I'm missing a camera somewhere. There's seven cameras on this thing, right? You know, and so you start thinking about the AI implications of a product that you're going to have near your eyes, that you're going to be able to look at things and say, hey Siri, what's that? Or hey Google, what's that? Or can you buy me five of those? Or, hey, show me more about the artist that made this picture in a museum.
So this is really core technology for spatial computing, but implemented in smart glasses.
Yes.
It appears.
And we should define spatial computing because probably a lot of your listeners go, what's spatial computing?
Okay, so you're the best person to define it. So
it's really easy. Spatial computing is computing that humans, robots or virtual beings, and we should talk about that, can move through. And augmented reality or virtual reality are the purest form of the drug, I say, right? Yeah. But autonomous cars are fit into spatial computing because it uses a lot of the same technology. That's back to seven cameras again. And the AI that's running this stuff is very similar on the car as on the glasses.
And, you know, the interesting part about all this is that you are immersed into this world that's being built by software. And it's quite different of a paradigm that we're used to where, you know, we're text-based or image-based or video-based. None of these things are going to matter. We're going to be immersed in it. And I think when you start walking down that road and you realize that now we have a chipset that can define this at very low power, at fundamentally lower costs, you know, as you put more on a chip, the costs go down, the heat profiles go down, and the resolutions we're talking about, what are we, 8K resolution?
Yeah, exactly.
Which is phenomenal to have that in a single chip.
And what we're really talking about here is the next computing paradigm after mobile phones, right?
Exactly.
And this is a huge one because with 8K screens on your face, you get as many monitors around you, virtualized monitors as you want, and you can make them as big as you want. So imagine being in an IMAX theater and instead of looking at a small laptop screen, imagine being working at a Starbucks and instead of looking at a small laptop screen, you're looking at something that's like an IMAX theater, right?
You know, and the interesting part is the paradigm of the screen goes away.
Yes.
We won't even think in those terms because it's a whole
Let's not go too far because people still will need to work on a spreadsheet document. Right.
But here's the thing, right? It is what you guys are describing. If you step back from the problem of, you know, how you wear a computer on your face or what, you know, like talking about, you know, this is a shift from smartphones to, you know, like smart glasses as a sort of a head-up display. But if you look at how the trajectory of how computers have changed in terms of the way we use them, one of the key, elements is the disappearing interface.
Exactly.
If you think about how complex it was to interact with a computer in the 1960s, you know, with programming with
tapes
and line editors and marking on cards to program interpreters and stuff like that. And today, you know, a child can pick up an iPad and 2-year-old child can use it. So we're getting to this point where as computers become more powerful, there's less of an effort to operate. And so eventually we take that to its nth degree and computing is just, we're immersed in it, right?
Yeah. What really opened my eyes was going to Europe a couple weeks ago, and every single transaction I did was done with Apple Pay, right? Because Europe is way ahead of the United States.
By the way, China with facial recognition.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, let's not go weird. We know China is...
We're all going to be using Chinese mobile wallets in 10 years.
probably, right? But let's just go with Europe. I went to Barcelona, I went to Rome, and I went to London. And every transaction, the taxis, I bought some clothes, I went to many restaurants, they all took Apple Pay, right?
Yeah.
And you can pay with your watch, right?
Exactly.
And you know this. Your listeners know this very deeply. But now think about walking around with your glasses and you look at a jacket and you go, I want that jacket. And it just charges you for it. And you walk out with it without talking to a salesperson.
Yeah.
This is already happening if you go to an Amazon Go store, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It hasn't been put together into an experience. And the glasses... enable this whole experience to come together.
The entire world becomes a commerce experience, right? Because with this product identification system, I mean, you're talking about everything wrapped up into the transaction. So you look at a jacket, Robert's walking down the street, I like Robert's jacket, boom, buy it. And it's there.
Pieces of it are already here, right? If you get the Amazon app on your phone, and almost everybody who's listening probably has an Amazon app on their phone.
Yeah.
Go to the app and look for the camera feature. There's a camera feature that you can turn on, and you aim it at your friend and look at and turn it on, and it'll find you shirts that look like the one that your friend is wearing, right?
And it's really powerful.
It's very powerful. It's just the affordance of, first of all, finding it. Very few people use this feature. That's why I'm talking about it.
Yeah.
But the affordance of using this feature is not quite there. And when you get glasses with seven cameras on them, you're just going to look at something, go, can you, Amazon, hey, Amazon, can you buy that for me or buy 10 of those? I want that shirt, you know? And you'll see it pop up in your view and you'll just say, yeah, that one, I want 10 of those. And it'll know your size already and boom.
This is pretty interesting because, you know, when we've been talking about the head-up display surfacing in smart glasses, you know, in the past, we've been talking a lot more about sort of the interface aspects of it, you know, how you'd build the user experience, how intense that would be and so forth. We haven't been talking a lot about image recognition through the cameras in the glasses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's critical.
These cameras are really sharp, right? They're probably 8K cameras that are going to be put into these things, and they're really small. I met the LG camera team while I was touring Tesla's factory one day, which is a real story. But they make the cameras for the iPhone, and they make the cameras for the Tesla. And I said, when are we going to get really small cameras for glasses? Is that going to come by 2022? And they all smiled at me. In other words, yes. We're getting really small, really high-resolution cameras that'll be on the rims of glasses that will let you look at stuff and recognize it. And by the way,
this is insane.
The Amazon app, my friends in China say, oh, that's nothing. In China, if you use the Amazon competitor in China, you look at the T-shirt and it tells you the brand of the shirt.
Yep. Yeah. Alibaba.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
No, they've got that tech now.
Yeah.
And not only that, that these guys are then using that information about, you know, where people, what people eat or what they, you know, what they want to eat or what they want to wear. And they're building then capabilities to get merchants on the street selling that stuff based on, you know, those interactions. It's just really, really insane.
And it's moving, Brett, it's moving so rapidly. I mean, like Robert said, all the pieces are here. We're not, actually almost everything we're talking about isn't really futuristic. It's really about the will and the desire to put it all into one product. And and we talk a lot about that offline because those opportunities are immense. But
there's two elements, right? We've still got to solve more broadly, which is first is battery capability, you know, because you've got a smaller form factor. And there was one other I was thinking of, but it's gone.
Well, now. I was going to say the social contract aspect of
the GPU. The GPU, right? So the graphics processing capability to do all this image recognition, you'll probably have that on a separate unit.
All right, let's get a little nerdy. That's what Brian and I like to do.
Yeah.
Apple has a huge... The reason I think Apple has such a huge advantage in this market, even compared to the Qualcomm headset that came out yesterday, is everybody knows they're going to need to buy a new phone in the next 3 years. Nobody in my world keeps a phone more than 3 years. Even the poor people in my life, like people who are struggling month to month, they go and uncork a new Apple iPhone purchase every 2 years, right?
Yeah.
Because it's such an important device to have.
I resemble that comment.
Yeah, I do, right? I know I'm going to buy the 5G iPhone next September, right? We already know this, and we've already priced in that we're going to spend, you know, $800 to $1,500 on a new phone every 2 years. And that piece has the Qualcomm, next year's phone is going to have the Qualcomm 5G radio in it. Mm. And it's going to have a big battery. My battery this year in this year's phone, was almost twice as long as the phone I had 2 years ago, right?
Yeah.
And it has the CPU, and it has, importantly, a new AI chip is coming, and it has this thing that Brian knows a lot more about than I do, the ultra-wideband chip that lets us do all sorts of magic new things that are about to come onto the market, even without glasses, right? Well, Brian, why don't you tell us about this ultra-wideband chip?
Yeah, so ultra-wideband is, to put it in the simplest terms, is indoor mapping, right? Three-dimensional indoor mapping. You might want to look at it from that point of view, X, Y, and Z. Why that is important is we need to know from a AI or software point of view, where are you in a particular space and what is in that space? And once you know where you are and what's in that space, you can interact with it. The beauty of the ultra wideband or the U1 chip that Apple has hidden in the new iPhone 11s and perhaps some tags that are going to be put out there for locators and things of that nature, it'll allow us to be able to build that three-dimensional space that we're all talking about. Without it, it is exceedingly difficult with just using optics. You want the radio and the optics. It's all frequency, by the way. I mean, we're just talking about a different capability of that frequency. Radio reflects off objects differently than, for example, video or imagery. So at the end of the day, what Apple has built is all the different pieces to actually have what we're talking about, but just not put it inside a device. And right. One of the things is battery life. And one of the things is...
But will that also help with chip-to-chip communication and stuff as well?
Yes.
Within a absolutely. Spatial environment?
So you can tell faster.
In 3D, this object is smart.
Well, this is where I was going with the glasses. Yeah. Apple can separate the glasses into two pieces. One major piece is down in the phone, where all the processing happens and all the radio.
I get it now.
Right?
The ultra wideband will communicate back and forth.
Right, right. So it's not like Bluetooth. It's far more reliable.
And also,
it's a magnitude faster.
It has huge pricing advantage because of that, because Apple knows that you're going to spend $1,000 on the new phone. Maybe I spend $1,500 on mine, right? Yeah. And we've already spent that next year. I've already budgeted. I know I'm going to spend $1,500 on a new phone next year, right? Yeah. And then it can then come out with a pair of glasses for $1,500 or $2,000. Yeah. And the combined... And
they can tell you replacing your laptop.
Bingo.
Yeah.
Your monitors. But
exactly.
The combined but think about this one. The combined price of those two pieces together is $3,000, $4,000, right?
Yeah.
But Magic Leap or Facebook or Microsoft doesn't have the phone in your pocket. So they have to compete with the same technology, but for a lower price, because they're going to have to convince you to give up the Apple ecosystem and go over to the Microsoft ecosystem.
So you heard it here first, guys, buy Apple stock.
I've been saying that for 2 years. I know. And it's done pretty well this year, hasn't it?
Yeah.
But the market hasn't even priced in what's going to happen with 5G, because I guarantee you, right now, how many iPhones does Apple sell a quarter, average quarter? It's about 38 million, right? When the 5G iPhones come out next year, they're going to double the sales. And people are like, well, there's no 5G to use. It doesn't matter. That's not why people buy things. I sold 60 Celestron telescopes 1 year because Halley's Comet came, and the telescope was the worst thing to do to view Halley's Comet, right? I actually talked to one customer about this. I said, you're spending $2,000 on something that you don't need. He goes, shh. Don't tell my wife. This is the excuse I'm using to spend $2,000. And by the way, that's what I do. I study why people buy things. And 5G is going to be real important to have if you go to a football game, right?
Right.
I went to the World Series at AT&T Park, and I could not make a phone call or send a text or post an Instagram photo. All three things I wanted to do. 5G is going to fix that problem. So it's going to be real important to have that at a football stadium or baseball stadium. In fact, in Las Vegas, they've already put millimeter wave radios in their hockey stadium and other stadiums. And they're already planning games that you're going to play with other people in the stadium and stats on top of the football players or the hockey players that you're going to hold your phone up and you're going to see all sorts of stuff on the ice of stats and other things. And the glasses are going to take that to another level. You're going to wear these glasses to a hockey game or a football game and get, you know, all sorts of new services. Hey, deliver me a hot dog to my seat and a beer.
And the players will be wearing the glasses too. The whole experience will be different.
Yeah, because then you can say, I want to see what it, you know.
Exactly.
What does Wayne Gretzky see?
But the thing is, you can actually have all the players up on a huge virtual screen, and you can zoom in and out and actually create your own broadcast from that particular sporting event or concert. I mean, you name it. These sort of systems are going to completely redefine what we think entertainment is. And that's why I think Apple is going down the service line.
Yes.
You know, because services is going to become fundamentally important. That's going to be the software that's going to be running this new hardware. The software that we know of today is going to disappear. You know, we're really not going to think about it.
No, I know.
This is really a big deal, right?
Yeah.
I just got a new fiber line into my house, a gigabit up and down. And yes, you should be jealous if you don't have one, because it is amazing, right? And then I got a new Wi-Fi 6 network. So I basically have pretty close to 5G bandwidth in my house right now. And it completely changed my life. I uncut the cord from Comcast and put in YouTube TV, and I watch all my news and sports on YouTube TV now. And that got me off of all the Comcast stuff. And now I'm starting to watch football games both at home when I have big bandwidth on a nice screen, but I switch. If my wife wants to go and do some chores, I just switch on the game on my phone and watch it while I'm driving down to the store with my wife, and I'll put in my AirPods and listen to the game, you know, while I'm doing chores.
Well, you're not driing your Tesla.
Well, yeah,
no, my Tesla drives itself.
We're not driving soon enough, exactly.
It got another update this week, man. How many cars get better every 2 weeks?
Yeah.
I got new features this week. It got better at self-driving.
Look, we're all Tesla.
It got 5% faster. My car is faster. My Toyota never got faster after I bought it.
It's true. All right. So what about, and this, Brian, this is going to come back to one of your favorite areas, but what about the spatial computing when it comes to the use of your ears and how we're working on tech for extending the augmented reality environment using headphones or speakers?
Well, Brett, this is a great moment in time, actually, because with AirPods Plus, we're starting to see the beginnings of that. First, with ambient sound cancellation or noise cancellation, however you want to look at it, but also the ability to zoom in on a particular voice that you want to hear. So, if you're in a crowded restaurant and your significant other is across the table, and you want to whisper sweet nothings to each other, you can actually do it with these types of devices on. Now, we can do it through a number of systems. We can do it just using the sound AI sound technology. But the augmentation of actually reading the lips at the same time and amplifying the voice and regenerating that voice artificially so that it sounds even more rich is going to be one of the things that we're going to see in the next 3 years. It's already starting to happen. Yesterday and today I was talking about the Snapdragon 865 chip. This chip, inside the chip without any network connection, can do speech to text back into another language. So it can do full translation inside the chip without taking a network connection. It's amazing. And see, a lot of people think that, well, you're anti-network. It's irrelevant. What I'm saying is, as we put everything inside of a chip, I'm trying to put Wikipedia inside a chip with this Japanese company right now, a complete download of Wikipedia. When you're 3 nanometers away from your data or your capability, you now have essentially another realm of power. And so the augmented sound, the ability to cancel out noises that you don't want, yet still actively hear the things that are dangerous. I know Robert does this in his Tesla. You can drive down the road, cancel out all the noise of that Tesla, not that it's really loud, but cancel it out nearly, but still hear sirens, still hear the things that you need to hear, the police men telling you to pull over, things like that.
Your Tesla is just going to pull over because the fire truck is coming up behind you. You
know? No, I was going to say there. The U.S. Air Force worked on some technology similar to this, so that you could hear a threat. For example, you know, you're getting painted with a radar. It could give you the spatial sense of where that aircraft or that radar ping was coming from, or things like that. Or even when they were getting the idea or looking at research, where for a pilot, if it was an imminent threat, then it would be the voice of a family member that would express that threat to the pilot, so they'd respond in a very different way.
Really. Well, Brett, this is important technology here. Yeah. You know, some of the stuff that I'm working on in my little garage lab is that I'm creating this three-dimensional, 360-degree sound envelope that you'll be living in. And part of what that does is that throughout that 360 degrees, you'll hear the different voices of friends on social media, different things like that, that can pop in and talk to you. And so it's not just a visual space, it's the audio space combined. It's really
funny hearing all this, because I saw this stuff when I worked at Microsoft 15 years ago.
Yeah, right? It's old tech.
One guy put a bunch of speakers into his office. In fact, he said in 10 or 20 years, and it hasn't quite proven out, but maybe coming soon, that the status office at Microsoft won't have any windows. Because he put projectors on each of his walls so that he could have like email on one of them and video on another.
The only element I disagree with that is probably that we're going to use windows of buildings increasingly for solar generation with transparent PV cells and stuff over the future.
The optics eventually by 2025 get rid of things anyway. So if you don't want windows, you can turn them off.
Right? Yeah, that's true.
Get some data there, or if you want to add a window, right? But where I was going with this is he had an array microphone on his computer that listened to your voice and could take direction much better. Today, you have an array microphone on your Apple AirPod Pros, right?
Yeah.
And $250. Back then, his microphone cost $10,000 to build. And he had multiple speakers around the room to do this spatial audio. Well, today a Bose pair of glasses, the Bose Frames, which actually I think are a real important product. Brian, do you have a pair of those?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. Explain why that's such an important product. It's not going to be a very popular product, but it's a real important product
From my perspective, it's bone conduction, right? Bone conduction is and air conduction, you know, combined. A lot of people get freaked out with the concept of bone conduction. It's actually a much easier way to deliver sound potentially silently to you. This is part of that.
It's not that different from what naturally happens to your ear canal, right?
Exactly. It's just you're normally used to hearing air conduction to get to your eardrums.
Yeah.
Bone conduction actually can give you potentially higher fidelity if it's done the right way. And Bose is really cutting edge on this. I really wouldn't be surprised to see bone conduction in Apple glasses when they finally arrive to some level. It may not be the primary system, but talk about being able to have somebody whisper in your ear. It's one thing
Google Glass experimented with.
It's real important because when you're wearing an AirPod, and particularly the new AirPod Pros, it blocks the analog audio from getting to your ear, right? And it has a microphone on both sides that's doing an array kind of microphone looking for your voice. And then it has processing in it. In fact, a pair of AirPods has more compute power than an iPhone 4 had in it. That's really remarkable to think about.
In your ear.
Just a few years ago, your entire phone had less processing than your headphones have today on them. And then it processes that audio coming in and affects the speaker, right? And that's why we're starting to say this is augmented audio, because it's taking the analog audio that's coming in your ear, processing it, doing things with it, sweetening it, and pushing it into your ear. And I've seen headphones that have done this before. At Coachella, they handed me a pair of headphones, and I'm standing in front of $2 million worth of audio gear right at a music festival. and you put these headphones in, and then you could process the music that you're listening. You could turn down the bass if you don't like that. You can change the volume. You can process it so that Skrillex is in a small little church all of a sudden, right? All sorts of fun stuff you could do with it.
And, or in the future you'll be, in a foreign land, and someone speaking a foreign language to you, and we'll hear it in English.
But let's go further, because when you have a device on your face with seven cameras that knows exactly where that device is and exactly where you're looking, now you can go into a bar. Like the three of us could go into a really noisy bar, and I'm looking at your mouth. I'm looking at your mouth, and it can use the array microphones on there to focus the audio attention on your mouth, because it knows where I'm looking, and therefore it can make it so I can hear you like you're in a quiet room, right? That is going to be what's really mind-blowing. And then the Bose technology where you mix the audio into the real world lets you smoothly go in and out of the real world and into a virtual world, and you don't even notice you've switched from virtual to, like, listening to Spotify music or watching a football game to listening to your friends talking to you at a bar. Right?
And the thing
smoothly
is,
smoothly moves in and out.
Yeah, it can mix in and out the sound so that you're never really jarring yourself with music or loud voices. And a constellation of voices can come from nowhere. I mean, we're talking about a superpower, from an audible level and obviously from a visual level. So it's phenomenal. And this technology is here right now. It's just a matter of putting it in one package. It's really what we're talking about.
Yeah.
At Breaking Banks, we're very happy to have Dollar Shave Club as a sponsor of our program, of our podcast. And I've been a member of them for years. You might remember a few years ago, they went very viral. And of course, you probably know they have, world-class products like the Executive Razor, Shave Butter, Prep Scrub, and so forth. But if you go to their website, you can actually take this quiz and they will take you through all of your needs for grooming. They have everything you need: shower, shave, styling your hair, brushing your teeth, everything. And you can configure that to your needs, and they can keep you automatically stocked up on the products you use. You get what you want whenever you need it, whether that's once a month or just a few times a year. So right now, you can put the quality of Dollar Shave Club's products to the test. Their Ultimate Shaver Starter Set has basically everything you need for an amazing shave: the Executive Razor, Shave Butter, Prep Scrub, and Post Shave Dew. The best part is you can try it, because you're a Breaking Bank listener, for just $5. After that, the restock box ships regular sized products at regular prices. And you get the ultimate starter set for just $5 at dollarshaveclub.com/fintech. That's dollarshaveclub.com/fintech. Let me tell you about one of our new sponsors for Breaking Banks. I love these guys, Bowl and Branch Sheets. And I love them because, I didn't think of flannel sheets as luxury. I didn't think of them as modern. But what these guys have done with these things is they're incredibly comfortable. In fact, they're rated as the softest and most comfortable sheets in the world, and the only bedding loved by 3 U.S. presidents. For a limited time, you can get their luxury flannel bedding to keep you cool, sleepers warm, and because they breathe, keep the warm sleepers cool. Shipping is always free. You can try them out for 30 nights risk-free, and right now, you get $50 off your first set of sheets at bowlandbranch.com with promo code BANKS. You can get $50 off bowlandbranch.com, promo code BANKS. So you spell that B-O-L-L and branch, .com. Don't forget to use the BANKS code to promo code to get you $50 off.
The business community's first choice in internet talk radio, Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag Breaking Banks. Now, back to the program.
What's occurred to me as we're talking about this is, you know, science fiction has dealt with this a little bit, but, you know, this is one thing we haven't sort of seen explored in science fiction, near-term sci-fi in interesting ways.
We haven't seen a real Hollywood film have an autonomous car chase yet.
Wait until that comes down.
I mean, James Bond is still driving a manually driven Aston Martin. I mean, that's so lame to me. It's like, why are you driving a manual car? Put the thing on autopilot and then start shooting him back at your chasers, you know?
I think he's wearing a Rolex in his next movie, too.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know.
So there's a lot going on there.
Oh, my goodness. Is it CGI Rolex or not?
Who knows? Everything in movies is fake. Let's just start with that. You're right. Movie or TV shows like Black Mirror have shown the downsides of this kind of new technology and gets everybody afraid of it. But we haven't seen anybody have the optimistic side of it and show you how it really improves your life.
We're going to produce a counter to Black Mirror then.
Well, it's really hard to make people go to a movie theater when, this is a fun movie about the future. People like to go to things that scare them.
Yeah.
Well, one of the reasons I've been posting a lot of historic videos, especially the ones that are retro-futuristic, you know, 1960s projecting to 2020s, is to show people that we've lost that art. We've lost the art of being optimistic about presenting the future. And I take it very seriously. The three of us sitting down, putting out what retro-futuristic things can come in the next 30 years. It used to be AT&T, Bell Laboratories, Xerox did some of this stuff, Philips. Ford did an incredible one that I think 3 million people have watched at this point. And it showed the future that they wanted to see come about. And it was highly accurate. Yeah. I mean, we're talking about, social media. We're talking about, commerce, web commerce, voice commerce, all these sort of things. And it just doesn't seem to be popular at this point. Nobody really wants to talk about the upside. And I think Robert's right. We want to be dystopian. But, we don't necessarily have to be utopian. We can be just sort of pragmatic about this technology.
Yeah.
And I think people would get excited.
Well, and it's going to happen anyways. And my Europe trip shows this, right? Here I'm in a place that has no technology industry. It's Rome. It's old. And everything took Apple Pay. Which shows just how deeply the world can change, like the entire world can change in very short amount of time, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So we're going to get this stuff, and it's going to catch a lot of people unawares because most people haven't been inside a VR headset. If you haven't played Oculus Quest and had one of those on your head, you really have no idea what the future is about, right?
Yeah.
And if you haven't played with spatial computing like a Magic Leap, you probably have no idea why did that company get $2.6 billion?
Even think about all these companies right now who are grappling with just getting themselves onto mobile.
Right? Oh, yeah.
You think about how they're going to have to think about interface design in three dimensions.
Yes.
There could be just like when we had the internet come along and we had sort of a changing of commerce models, and now these major tech companies dominate all of this because that was that moment in time where we went from physically ordering at a store to, now ordering online. And it's almost as if we're coming up to something of that magnitude again in respect to that. Because that three-dimensional interface design and that experiential design really will frame how you conduct a whole lot of commerce and stuff.
Yeah, like that. And good companies are starting to invest a little bit, and that's the smart strategy right now. Invest a little bit. Red Bull, for instance, did a volumetric scan of their mountain bike mountain. and built a little app for augmented reality on mobile phone. Well, that learning then can be spread around the corporation, and more teams next year will do more of that kind of thing, and they'll be ready for when the glasses come for consumers. Well, and they're coming, right?
Think about this. You really got to think about the bigger picture of commerce. So I think it's an element that a lot of us forget, and a lot of people in the financial world really got to sort of play this out in their mind. The inventor of the one-click shopping cart, the shopping cart that changed the internet, was Jeff Bezos, right?
Yeah.
And who's got the best augmented product image data on the planet? Amazon. Yeah. Amazon can identify a product in three dimensions on poor lighting conditions from sometimes, 50 paces away. It's a very, very powerful system. And when you pair that with the ability of voice commerce, where we're just saying buy that, and this is a basis of part of the voice commerce scenario, Amazon is one of those companies that are uniquely positioned for somebody to do what we talked about earlier on, walk down the street, look at anything, and the entire world is showrooming you. I mean, you're shopping anywhere and everywhere, and you just simply look at something, you buy it, you go to a bank virtually, you start thinking, what do virtual banks look like? A lot of people listening to us are in the banking world. What do they look like? Well, Rob and I can sit here and talk hours about that, and so could Brett. But the thing is, it isn't going to model what came before. These are going to be completely new interfaces, new paradigms.
And so you're going to have businesses built around behavior sets, for example, rather than demographics or location. It's super interesting.
That's a massive shift there. And I think you can't overstate that enough. Behavior is going to be fundamentally more important than demographics.
Yeah. And the predictive side of things. Right, because you can use behavior to start to predict other behaviors, or you can overhear a conversation. There's already some debate about this within.
This is why spatial computing includes autonomous cars, because that's how an autonomous car works. Yeah. It has to predict what is the next likely action of a pedestrian standing at a crosswalk. What's the likely next action of a cop waving you through an intersection, right? What's the likely next action of a bicyclist going on the road in front of you? And it needs to predict all of those actions accurately. And that technology is going to predict all sorts of things about humans and what we're about to do next. And it's going to improve our lives because of it.
And we can't even think of the possibilities yet, because we haven't even opened up that Pandora's box. And there's a Pandora's box in all of this, of course. I mean, I talked about it earlier. There's a social contract about privacy that we have to rewrite. What does it mean when somebody has seven cameras on their head? How is that data going to be used? Does it go to the cloud?
And others. I have two Facebook portal devices in my house, which I know a lot of people go, why would you put a Facebook surveillance device in your house? Right? The thing is magic. When I walk in my kitchen, the thing turns on because the camera's looking.
Personally, I'm already so reliant on Alexa. When Alexa can know what I want by, reading my facial expressions and stuff like that.
Well, that's coming, right? And Alexa's inside my Facebook portal, right? Yeah, so I can say, hello, Alexa. But the portal, when the camera turns on, it turns on the screen and it turns my icon green so all my friends can call me.
So, right?
Things like that that really make your life better. And it really drives privacy people nuts too, right?
Yeah, like, because
why would you give up your privacy? Well, you get all this utility.
Value exchange. People don't understand that if there's a good enough value exchange, then you're happier to give over your identity. Because
It's got to be explicit, though. That's the biggest thing, is we kind of got to move away from the click to agree 900 pages and get to more simplistic language ideas. Then there's no surprises.
It's also funny. The Facebook portal is the only device I have that has a switch that turns off the microphone and covers the camera. Because Mark Zuckerberg knows that people are freaked out by his privacy stance, right?
Especially since he taped over his camera and put in
there. And so you can do the same thing. If you don't want it to see you, you can cover it up, right? But when you do, you give up the utility. Right?
Yeah,
it's interesting as you play this through to the different agreements you have to make to the different devices, both pleasure, work, all around you. These are all going to come at us very quickly.
Yeah.
So the question is, how are we going to deal with it as a society? Because I don't think the companies are really dealing with it the best way.
Yeah.
And you know, when we start getting into financial privacy and banking, that's when it's going to get very interesting, because we're right into that point much more in this type of technology than we have been with the web and voice before.
And there are a lot of unanswered questions. For instance, if I'm wearing one of these Qualcomm glasses with seven cameras and I walk into a bathroom,
what
is that thing doing? And how does it turn off? How do I signal other people it's off and not capturing them, right? There's a lot of unanswered questions.
And Robert knows this because he's been patient zero for wearing glasses, and I think he's experienced about every possible humiliating
Well, you know, the famous shower scene.
We there we go. I've been naked with my glasses, and I'm proud of it.
My God.
Well, you had to bring it up, Brian.
I had to. But
it'll be on my grave. It's the only thing that'll survive, I don't know, 800 years out of my life, because the patent system will survive that long, maybe.
But the interesting thing is...
And magically put me in a patent. So.
Oh, there you go, yeah.
Yeah, it's true.
So the thing is, how do we deal with that, right? How does a company deal with that? How does a bank walk down this road with, you know, I mean, again, this is all new technology. Software disappears. The service is what's rendered. It's jobs to be done. And you know, you start thinking about the intelligence that's in the channel. And in my view, I think every business is going to be building an intelligence in their channel. And their channel is going to be essentially an AI voice and an avatar. Yeah. Right, or a hologram, right? What does that look like? What does a company look like? Right?
Yeah, it is a problem for users too. You know, I went down to Nellis Air Force Base and got a tour of the war room down there, where they control a lot of drones and do a lot of research.
Wow.
And they took away every piece of electronics that I had, even including my key fob to my car. They said, "Here, you got to put that in this basket." And so if I'm wearing a pair of these glasses, they're going to force me to take them off to go into that room. And I've been to parties where they say no phones, no capturing, no social media, right? So now am I allowed to wear them, my Apple glasses or my Qualcomm glasses, right? And there's other situations.
You have to put it in airline mode.
Yeah, but how do you prove that to somebody?
Yeah, right? That's part of the social contract, right?
What if your glasses are your glasses? Yeah.
Well, yeah. And see, that's the interesting part. And Brad, I think you make up a really great point here, is we're going to move away from the traditional glass prescription into things that use fiber optic channels and LCDs and things of that nature to correct your vision to a level you've never seen before, right?
Obviously. With Zoom capabilities as well, right?
Zoom in on things with at will, everybody's going to want to wear these things. So what becomes of it? Because they're all going to be wrapped up into these devices.
Run some simulated X-ray vision software.
Heat signatures coming off of people. We haven't even talked about the telemetry that we can pull off of people from a biometrical standpoint, their health. I mean, Apple just filed a patent to track Parkinson's disease. Yeah. And there's all these different things that are going to make you want to be wearing these. There might even be a medical device. They might even be stimulating your immune system, your bloodstream. There's all things that we can start doing with these devices. Now, that's a few more. That's a decade. But as we talked about before, these are some of the positive things that we could start talking about.
Yeah.
And people are going to say, I want that. I can use it right now.
Have you guys seen that short sci-fi film called EyeSight?
No.
With the eye or sight? Yeah. I've got to send it to you, because this guy's wearing smart contact lenses, and he starts off in the morning doing like his little exercise, which is, I don't know, like he's an AR bird flying through these these loops. And then he goes on a date, and later on the date, he runs this software on his smart glasses called Wingman. and Wingman coaches him as he's going through his date on what to say, what to order for the girl based on her social media profile. And it can read facial tics and stuff like that, heart rate and so forth. So when this guy is performing better on the date, you know, the little heart rate score goes up in the corner of the HUD, you know, showing him that she's responding positively because it's getting all that feedback visually. It's not that far-fetched, right?
No, it's not. In fact, I went to BetaWorks in New York and saw a bunch of virtual beings, and they're coming along. There's virtual beings under development. And a virtual being is something like Magicleap has this thing called Mica.
Yeah, Mica.
And it looks like a human. You see it in the glasses, and it talks to you eventually. And it can play games with you and interact with you, but it's not a human. It's a complete AI thing. And I've seen AIs that are do music,
like in AIs. New Zealand, those guys that have those avatars, very human like. You could easily put that into an augmented reality environment.
Yes,
or you could just bring Sophia in and. Basically, we're virtualizing, but we're also manifesting in physical form a lot of this stuff. So we're really in a new realm. And all these technologies interplay with each other. They will all self-fortify.
The problem for a Mica to work, it needs to know a lot about you. And so now we're really into the deep, no privacy world.
Well, that's why I'm into hyperlocal, right? I think some things should never go to the cloud. I think we're going to ultimately agree.
Give me some examples.
I do think that the way we think about data needs to change structurally. So it needs to be stuff that you say, well, this data, what I'm observing around you, this is a tradable entity. So in return for this data, this service layer that's built,
it's monetized,
will give me XYZ. But when it comes to my personal data, when I'm speaking to my family at home, I'm talking about a medical problem, when I'm on the phone talking about my bank account, those sort of things. This is data that needs to be considered, at a different level of privacy and security, right? And so, I think there needs to be some way to sort of classify data in that way and have, private keys and things maybe assigned to some elements of data.
Well, Brett, my view and some of the stuff that I've been working on is we can by building this new world that we're talking about, we can implant a component of monetization, and you can choose to monetize the data that you want to. So instead of it being pulled from you, you can push out the monetization of the things that you choose. And that can be situational. It can be highly contextual to what you want. And there can be bidders out for your data. And they simply trade a token with you, and you've now received compensation. And
this is a pretty good model for tokens, actually.
But it's beautiful for tokens, and I can't imagine it not happening, because it's a spaghetti mess that the only the user can really ultimately determine through their own AI, a trusted AI.
Because there's a behavioral element to this. If you accept it on one occasion or 10 occasions, then it should be able to repeat that sort of thing rather than having to get you authenticate every single thing. But hey, listen, guys, we've run out of time.
Yeah,
it's been an insane.
We could talk all day because we haven't touched.
Beautiful. Absolutely,
we've only touched a few things.
What's
coming in the next 5 years.
Great radio. And whenever you guys come on, it's always great radio. And of course, bringing you together was brilliant. So I thank you for your time today, Robert. How do people get in touch with you or watch what?
If you can't figure that out.
I can figure it out.
There's this thing called Google,
The Google.
I'm on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn.
All right, but if you guys want to hear a little bit more about Robert's company, it's called Infinite Retina. You can check that out, and of course, follow him on social media, and he's on everything. Brian, what about yourself?
My first and last name on Twitter, Quora, and LinkedIn. I write my longer forms on Quora and do my short forms on Twitter. Reach out to me. I'd love to hear from anybody.
When's the Voice First book coming out, dude?
It's a balance between building stuff in my garage and writing about it. And building has been winning out, but I got to commit to getting it to paper.
Yeah. All right, guys. Thanks very much for joining us again on Breaking Banks.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time for more of the latest in fintech news.